Mother, man.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Mayhem! What the fuck, man? How you doing, brother?
Long weekend.
It was a long weekend, Mr. Shawback. It was. We were fucking bludgeoning our eardrums this weekend. It was fucking awesome. Bringing in episode 21, man.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it was a good 20th last week. I think we had some fun doing that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is what it was. Local murder for the fucking 20th episode,
yeah,
though, dude.
Like, SNS, yeah. Liquors.
We got some people talking back, commenting about that one, too, so thanks.
Yeah, very cool. Definitely we enjoyed doing that. And, of course, here in studio, kind of a surprise return guest.
Yeah, it's our first time, second.
Joey Cashman, Gormonger.
Hello.
Cashman Outside. Cashman Outside, also known as Cashman Outside. But, yeah, it's cool that that you're here, Joey, because we were just talking about Bloodshed. I had just such a good time. Of course, you were the last band that I saw there that night. It was fucking badass.
It was
great.
Very good time. Greg does a good job out there in the small town of Colfax. You know, it makes us feel a little more professional than what you might have thought in a town like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, it's going to be cool. We'll talk about it a little bit more in the metal segment, but we had a very interesting thing happened on stage that we'll talk more about.
That's so awesome.
That was fucking, and I use this word only when it's necessary, epic. It was epic. And so we'll tell you more about that. We'll tease that one a little bit.
Yeah, because we're going to be doing a full episode.
Yeah, so we're going to do the full, but in the metal segment, we'll tell them a little bit about it. So we're going to be doing the killer Gary Heidnik. I've been kind of anxious to do this. I read the book. He's pretty fucked up, man.
He did some fucked up. The weird thing is he was smart, too, though.
Very smart.
Yeah.
A little bit too smart for his own
good. Probably that's what it was.
He had a stash of some young ladies chained up in his basement.
Yeah. No, they were there.
Oh, yeah, they were there when he
they
bought the place.
They were there when he bought the house.
Yeah, man. We'll talk more about Gary Heidnik and his strange intellect. A very smart guy, but at the same time, like, what the fuck were you thinking?
He's like high on the genius, low on the common sense.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. So it's a good one, though. But he was the influence of the Buffalo Bill character from Silence of the Lambs. So if you are interested in that, you'll definitely be interested to hear about Gary Heidnik and what he had going on. So.
Yeah, we'll be getting into him a little bit.
Yes, for sure. We also did an interview with the thrash metal band fucking since 1981, man.
Been a long time.
Schizo from the Bay Area out there in California.
Hell yeah.
And we're going to play a little excerpt from that. We had some tough Skype issues, but Lance Ozanix, the singer / puke meister, was
like
there.
Straight up for real.
Yeah, for sure. If you don't know what we're talking about, yeah,
look
you're
up
in.
Lance Ozanix.
Well, yeah, you go look on YouTube and you'll see what we mean. But we'll talk a little bit more about it because I play a segment from the interview where Lance talks about some stuff, and it's cool. It's a good interview. Also, his bass player, Nasty Nate Clark, was there. I'm not sure if he's in the excerpt we play, though.
That's kind of shitty. The fucking call didn't go through that.
Yeah, game. It was
Skype. It's the first time for that, honestly, right?
That it was like that.
Yeah.
Well, Joey Vera, we had to do it another day.
Oh, that's right.
Because
he
had similar issues out of Milwaukee, so. You know, it is what it is, but we'll definitely get Schizo on here again soon because they've got another album coming out here. But thanks to all you guys, you know, the loyal listeners. It's always cool to see. We look at the web the stats of who's listening and where and the cities.
Cities, countries.
This fucking blows our mind, man.
Pretty awesome.
South America. I mean, what the fuck? Should we start wearing sombreros when we do the show? I mean, fuck. Not to fucking disparage, but man, solidarity. Like, fuck yeah, there's some metalheads.
Oh, the South American.
Down there that are all about it.
They love metal.
So Chile, Brazil, and Peru, all in the top 10. Countries listening. Top 10 cities, it fluctuates quite a bit day to day, but Bloomington and Chicago, dead tie for first place.
Right, and that's fucking nuts. And there's a tie for second place as well.
Right, with New York City and Danbury, Connecticut. So that's crazy.
East Coast represent.
Totally, yeah. CK, I told you, he's like a fucking chick magnet, man. He's got the young ladies out there listening. I know does.
Yeah.
So, we really appreciate it. We saw Springfield, Illinois jump in, but now they're back out. Fucking Las Vegas continues to be in the top 10. Omaha, Nebraska, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I noticed was in there.
That's fucking crazy,
it's
man.
Just, and they drop in and out as people are listening. So it's live type stats, so it's cool. So we appreciate it very much, and leaving feedback, comments, and liking it, subscribing to it, whatever the fuck you got to do.
Get it on.
Please, because it helps and it spreads the message to others, because we're noticing these episodes that once we post them, they're like blowing up quick, right away. Like, for sure. So that's really cool.
So thanks, guys. Hell yeah.
And the past episodes are also being played a lot, which means people are going back, like we talked last week, like we all do with the podcasts we like. You know, you go back and listen to the other ones, you know, the ones that interest you. So anyway, we're going to have a good fucking show.
Fuck yeah.
Cashman outside in here with us. He might have maybe another mayhem to share, or at least we'll get to share with him, because that was a great story, dude. We got some
pretty, shit about that. That was awesome.
Dan Steinlicht, I think he sent me a message. I just listened to that. What the fuck? You know? So that's always a good feedback is what the fuck. Gotta love some fucking Morbid Angel, dude.
I fucking love Morbid Angel.
Yeah, Where the Slime
Cashman don't like him, though.
No, not at all.
He's more of a Cinderella kind of guy. Brittany Fox.
Amazing band.
Brittany Fox, Connecticut.
Yes, right. Girl school.
There you go. My baby broke all the rules. Nice. Oh, fuck.
I will say that me and Shawback may have been country cruising and listened to that song recently.
We might have done that.
You know what's really funny? I guess I can't help but bring this up. My old band from back when I lived in Connecticut, we played a show at this place called Baby J's. It was a bar / club in Fairfield, Connecticut, down south, kind of like by where ESPN and all that stuff.
Right.
Anyway. There was a sound guy there that was like this tall.
So and we're talking like 4 foot, yeah. 4 to 5 foot
tall. And
had
like hair down to his ass. And he looked just like a freak. Like he just was on like a movie set or something.
He was cousin it.
He looked like him. He was really skinny though.
Yeah.
And he was a great sound man and he was a great dude. So I shouldn't be making fun of him. But anyway, what was hilarious about playing that place was that every fucking time we played there, he bitched about a band, you know.
Right.
Bitched about Brittany Fox had played there because they were kind of up and coming, and was talking about them looking like a bunch of fucking queers. It was really funny listening to him go off about it. But then the worst was the night he was like throwing shit. What? When we got there and we were like, who the fuck pissed? His name was Jerry, now that I think of it. Who the fuck pissed Jerry off? And I'm like, I don't know. We just fucking got here. It wasn't us, you know.
Right. We just walked in the door.
He was throwing a fucking fit, and we got him to tell us what happened. And he said that Keel had played there. They were another fucking horrible 80s band. Ronnie Lee Keeled now does country, which is kind of funny. Nice. But anyway, Dan will love that one, reference to Ronnie Lee Keeled. But anyway, he was bitching that Keel had played there, and they threw a fucking fit because in their rider, it asked for two-pound bags of Reese's Pieces, okay? So he's like, I went to the fucking store. I looked for their fucking Reese's Pieces. I drove all over the fucking town, and he's going off about this shit. And all I could find was the little fucking bags. So I took a fucking bowl, and I put it on the table, and I poured all these bags. It was probably 10 times what they asked for. And they refused to go on. They wouldn't even sound check unless he had the two-pound bags.
Oh, my God.
And he was going fucking nuts. He, like, had to call his wife to, like, drive to New York to get these fucking
things.
Oh, my
God.
Oh, it was ridiculous, yeah. Fuck. But it was so fucking funny. So sorry for a complete departure.
No, that's
an impromptu
funny
story about what we were just talking about.
Classic, though.
So, yeah, it was fun. But anyway, back to murder, because that's what we're here to talk
about.
That's
what we're here to talk about now.
Gary Heidnik was a psychotic madman who captured... He had a thing for young black women for the purpose of breeding with them and keeping them chained up in his basement.
In a pit that he dug.
Yeah, in Philadelphia, in a kind of a skanky part of town, too.
Right.
Some even kept, like you said, in a hole he dug in the basement floor, covered with plywood, sandbagged.
Yeah, so they couldn't lift it.
Yeah, and at some point had stuck live fucking wires through a hole in the plywood. And then he put water in the hole. That was really nice.
Water and electricity do not fucking mix, man.
Gary was a special motherfucker. But, so he is definitely, fucked up. He murdered two of them, hacked one of them up, cannibalized. I mean, it's going to get grisly.
Pretty brutal.
It's a brutal one. So I think this is definitely right up our alley. And he also, a lot of people refer to him as the
bishop.
The bishop, yeah, he was. He created his own church, yeah, that's for sure. But no, he was also the inspiration for Thomas Harris's Buffalo Bill character from Silence of the Lambs. So that's what a lot of people, when you mention Heidnik, if they know of him, that's a big thing.
Yeah,
the book was huge.
Yeah, Silence of the Lambs is so good, and the character Buffalo Bill was insane, dude.
Yeah, so we'll definitely talk more about the ties to Buffalo Bill. But he born in 1943 in the Cleveland area, had a younger brother. They were raised by a single mom. They got divorced like he was only 2 or 3 years old.
Yeah, he was super young and lived with his mom.
Yeah. And it was a tougher, upbringing, especially at that time in the 40s. And 4 years later, they were sent to go back and live with their father and his new wife. So did some bouncing around, but really nothing like over the top.
Yeah, nothing crazy like fucking going into homes or fucking anything stupid like that. But
right. Yeah. And he would claim later, though, Heidnik, that he did suffer mental abuse.
Yeah,
he
said
his
dad abused him, like he had a bedwetting problem and shit.
Yeah, and he fucking embarrassed
his dad, dude.
What the fuck? Man, that is just horrible.
Make him fucking hang his goddamn piss sheets
for the neighborhood.
For the whole neighborhood to fucking see, man. Like,
if you
what
do
the
a
fuck?
Grindcore band, you should do piss sheets.
Piss sheets.
Yeah. I just thought of that. I'm coming up with good band names, Joey.
Heidnik piss sheets.
Heidnik's piss sheets.
I mean, of course, but the pissing fact or the bedwetting is one of
that's
those
a thing.
Yeah, the McDonald triad of bedwetting, fire setting, and cruelty to animals.
Well, and then something else that happened to Gary Heidnik too is he did have an accident where he fell and hit his head.
He did. I actually have that in here because we've been talking about that
head
Common,
injury shit.
Ramirez, fucking Gacy. There's been several we've talked about on the show and off the show about that. So totally, I agree that there's something there with that.
Yeah.
The bedwetting thing, that had to just be horrible, to have your fucking dad doing some shit like that. So if that's true, and the father denied it.
And he had a weird shaped head too, and they claimed it was from him falling out of the tree.
Yeah. Right, right. And yeah, the misshapen head thing, I mean, you know, kids are fucking cruel.
Yeah, so he's getting bullied at school all the time.
Getting bullied. You know, he did not do well in that environment, but he had an IQ of 143. So, I mean, he was near a genius.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
You know, 160, I think, is genius. So, I mean, pretty damn close and just did not fit in. And like you said, had that fall. And I totally think there's a tie. You know, it's funny. I'm not one of these conspiracy theorist types. However, you know, you think about these concussions they keep talking about in football. And
yeah,
that
we've
one
had
wrestler,
this discussion before and shit.
The wrestler,
yeah, Chris
Benoit. You know, these guys go off the fucking deep end and get, like, super violent. Now, we're talking about a different kind of accident where it's repetitive.
Right.
Whereas these are, like, pretty traumatic, like Kuklinski getting walloped at a work job site. And, like, but one incident. Now, maybe the exception might be our boy Pee-wee Gaskins. We still have to put him on the list.
Like, just, yeah, we got to do Pee-wee, dude.
He's brutal.
He's, like, out for what? Three,
like two or three days,
like some
his
shit
mom
like that.
Was like banging dudes, like literally right next to him.
While he's all unconscious from getting hit in the fucking head.
I mean, so that dude almost had a legit fucking reason to do what he did. But anyway, we digress. But there is something, I think, to the head injury thing. I do.
For sure.
Yeah. So, you know, he just wasn't doing good. So they sent him to military school at 14. His dad was behind it, you know, because he was obviously an outcast and not doing well, you know.
And then he came back and went to public school.
And he went into the Army, though, too.
Yes,
You know, so he was, you know, definitely got into the Army. He was trying to be like a medic or something in the medical field.
He originally wanted to be a MP, right?
I think they made him an MP because he was having issues, because which makes no sense that you would make somebody with psychotic issues a cop. But you know, go figure.
I honestly think it was the other way around. I think he wanted to be
because
an
he
MP.
Was at Fort Sam Houston in Texas, which is the military base for medical training.
Okay.
So I guess it's possible. I don't know. Whatever. He was involved with both, but
either
failed.
Way, but yeah.
Because he was having lots of issues. He claimed he had, like, really bad headaches. Again.
He got dizzy and shit all the
time. Could have been from the fall.
Or
could have been bullshit, too. You know, I was in the Army, and I seen all kinds of people pulling some bullshit to get out, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like Klinger from MASH, but not like, but
and dude, that, I don't care what anybody says. Still one of my favorite shows of this day. I love MASH.
MASH
dude.
Is amazing. So it's a great show. Well written show. But yeah, the basic training, you know, if you want to get out,
there's ways
they're
you
not
going
to know.
I have a friend.
So if they know you really want to get out, they'll do everything they can to fuck with you and not let
Let you out.
But it's the motherfuckers that don't want to get out that get legit hurt that are like, fuck, you know, send them home, you know.
I actually have a buddy whose son went into basic for the Army and shit, and he did not like it, and somehow he got out. He like pretty much acted like he was sick all the time and shit. Like,
yeah,
like,
in basic they want to weed those people out because they know they're
for
not
sure.
going to be able to do it, you know.
For sure.
The funny thing with talking about Heidnik too, because you know he was trying to, I think he was trying to be medic or you know medical,
right?
But his aspiration in that field was the psychological portion.
Oh,
he wanted to be like the military psychologist, something like that, which is funny going into the mind of somebody like that.
Right.
Yeah,
for sure.
Dude. Yeah, that is really weird. And definitely an odd coincidence.
Right.
He was a fucking, you know, exhibit one.
Fucking, testing his damn self.
Yeah. Because he claimed, you know, all this shit. So they sent him, they discharged him, sent him to the VA in Philadelphia in 1962. And then he was diagnosed with a schizoid personality disorder, discharged honorably. And he was given a monthly VA pension for his condition. I think he was rated 100%, which is the most they'll give you. I'm at 30 for what's wrong with my back and shit.
Right, right.
But so I'm familiar with the system.
For what he had, apparently, though, they gave him 100%.
Yeah, I think a lot of the psychological stuff, they figure you're that impaired that you literally are not going to be able to support yourself.
Right, so. Right.
This is also a lot longer ago.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So true. Things back then, they looked at that like you were a lot worse off than you would look at it now, I guess.
Yeah, that's not possible. That it's true. But... Especially coming off the heels of like the Vietnam War. Oh, yeah, for sure. You got to figure... Ugh, I mean, that's just awful what those dudes went through,
and yep.
A lot of them were really fucked up coming back, so... But, anyway, upon discharge, he began to become a licensed practical nurse in LPN, studying at the University of Pennsylvania, but he dropped out after a semester because he's just, you know...
Yeah.
Gary Heidnick, you know, he's fucked up. He's, you know,
he says, "I'm going to try
literally
this."
Fucked up in the head, you know.
He'd actually do good at shit too, though. But then just like, fuck this. I don't care no more.
Yeah, just totally like an ADD type thing.
Yeah, right? For real, like that.
So that may be part of what was wrong with him. I don't know. But you know, he did begin. Oddly enough, they gave him a job at the VA. Go figure. at a town in Coatesville, so Pennsylvania. But then he was fired for poor performance. Now, at that time, if the VA fired your ass, I can't believe you didn't go on a killing spree at the VA.
At the VA.
You know what? That was a little bit much. You're gone. You know?
Right.
They've gotten a lot better, but wow, back then at this time it would have been pretty
right,
awful.
I'm sure it would be
his attitude. They were saying he was pretty hateful towards some of the patients there, and
that's right. Yeah. Fucking nasty motherfucker. So from 62 to 67, Heidnick was in and out of the hospital for psychiatric problems. He tried to commit suicide 13 times.
Like, man,
yeah, I don't know.
I understand
he was
looking for attention, but damn, son. I mean, you attempted suicide 13 times. You can't get it right once.
Yeah.
Not saying suicide's good. Just saying, like,
yeah, how does it take that many 13, times? Maybe you're trying to, like you said, get attention.
Yeah,
suicide is badass.
Suicide is badass.
Frank Reynolds.
So yeah, none of us obviously condoning it, but we're goofing around. Yeah, I mean, this guy was starving for attention, because you're not going to do it 13 times if you really wanted to do it.
Yeah, you would have fucking done it.
Plus, he was smart, so he could have figured it out.
True. His mother was diagnosed with bone cancer in 1970 and turned to alcohol, and she committed suicide herself.
Yeah, she drank I can't even remember.
Some medicine, yeah.
I can't even think of it.
His younger brother was in and out of psychiatric hospitals and tried to commit suicide several times. So,
yeah, there's something with his family. He's just fucking crazy, dude.
Yeah, I mean, he's just got some shitty fucking genes, that's for sure.
Well, like they say, nurture and nature, like if his dad was beating him and shit, like, and that was his life, he's definitely gonna be like, he's either gonna do one of two things. He's either gonna go, I'm gonna be like that, or I'm not gonna be that.
Right, yeah, usually, yeah, you're right. It's either one or the other, dramatically one or the other.
Yeah.
No in between. It's a dramatic type thing.
For sure.
Yeah. In 1971, he founded, as Joey had mentioned earlier, the Church of the Ministers of God with only five members.
Only five to begin with.
Yeah. Now, I had joked around years ago I was going to establish the Church of Brutality. And I could. I mean, it's just
it's
I
simple,
would be a
yeah.
piece of paper, you know.
I'll give you my paychecks.
Yeah, your tithing. Yeah. Yes. But yeah, the Church of the Ministers of God. He opened the Merrill Lynch account, though, in 75 under the church's name.
With $1,500
and it grew to over $550,000.
Which in like this time, this
really
day's money, it's like $1.5 million, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that's
out of
unreal. 15,
well, like, what was 100, or what was 1500 worth back then? But still, like...
Say 2,500, 3,000, and grow.
Yeah,
up
say
to
you
a,
put 3,000 in, and you get a million or over $1 million, dude. That dude's a genius.
Yeah, I think I read something with his financial advisor. I think it's in the notes here that said he was a very astute investor, and when they were trying to say he was crazy and insane. that's like, how they you were see like, how hey, smart,
yeah, the,
you know, like, the during they brought this financial dude in there, and he was just like,
this dude's a fucking genius.
Yeah, he was really fucking on it. So, it definitely wound up coming back to haunt him because, you know, he did raise all that money, but still, it's kind of crazy.
Right, right.
I mean, he's kind of dipping into the cult status here, though.
Oh, totally.
You know?
Oh, yeah, for sure, dude. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, because like Chris said, they call him the bishop.
Yeah.
I always, whenever I hear the word bishop, I laugh like I'm in fifth grade again. Because I remember that George Carlin, that beating the bishop. I thought that was the funniest fucking thing I'd ever heard. Good. Like, it's just so fucking funny. So, anytime I hear the word bishop, I'm like, you know? It's like when my mother-in-law says warsh.
Warsh. Yeah. My dad does the same thing. Dude. You gotta go down Washington Street. Yeah, like, dude, first, there's no fucking R in Washington.
When I moved here, I think I told that story, but yeah, Washington Street. Warsh. I hear that, I'm like, sorry. She gets all pissed off. It's pretty good.
Oh, dude.
Anyway, I love my mother-in-law. She's a good sport to put up with my bullshit because she's deathly allergic to strawberries. So every holiday, I would make these, my mom used to make them real simple. They call them yogurt pies, which is two things of yogurt, Cool Whip, mix it up,
right,
put it in graham cracker, freeze it. Very simple.
Right, right.
But what I would do is I would make a key lime one, because that was the one she liked. And then I'd also make like a cherry or raspberry.
Say it was strawberry.
And I would write with a Sharpie what they were. And I would write strawberry on the other one. And she would be like, I can't believe you'd even bring that in. I'm like, it's not strawberry. And she's just like, gets so mad. It was pretty funny.
That's hilarious.
I'm like, it's not. I'm telling you, it's cherry. She's like, if I die, I'm going to kill you. I'm like, okay, good luck with that. So, no. It's just that's good great. Shit.
If me and Chris are ever on here doing a podcast and Pete's not here, it might be about him.
It could be. It could be. My mother-in-law baked me in a yogurt pie.
Yeah, no shit.
It should be a big motherfucking graham cracker to fit my heart big ass in. So Heidnik used a matrimonial service to find a wife in the Philippines named Betty Disto. That is such a strange fucking name.
That is.
It's like odd, but it's cool. Betty. She caught him in bed many times with a variety of women, so he was a total whore master.
Yeah, he was a total whore master.
But he liked her to watch him.
Yeah, and he raped her many times and would force her to watch him have sex with the other women.
Yeah, so, all the time, yeah.
Yeah, dude was like pretty off the hook.
It's like, how are you going to say you caught him in bed whenever he's showing you that he's in bed?
He's like, yeah, yo, yeah, come here.
You were like a participant in this shit. Like, it might have been unwilling, but you can't be like, what? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It's like, you know he's doing it.
Exactly. Right. It's fucking funny.
He got her to the U.S., though.
That's true.
He did get her to the U.S.
And she was able to get away with some help from a Philippine organization in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
In 87, though, Heidnik learned that he had impregnated Betty. In the short time they were married, surprised he had any fucking lead in the fucking tank after all that fucking he was doing. But anyway, he had a son, or they had a son, Jesse John Disto. That's kind of cool.
John Disto. She's like, I ain't using your last name. You're weird, dude.
Yeah. Right. And Heidnik was contacted, of course, for child support. Yep. So he was on the hook for that.
And that's the only way that's how he first found out. Was the child support people in? Yeah, like, hey, you got a kid.
And, it was like 2 years later, like getting served with papers and shit. Like, what? You know? Now Heidnik got other women pregnant, and he had a son, Gary Jr. So he's adding to his stock there. But the child put in foster care because the mother was like mentally challenged.
That's a weird thing about his story too. Yeah. Like everybody associated with seems
almost
like
all of them were like picked up at like a hospital or something. Like he was a pretty devious, sick fucking prick, man.
It's like I was saying, he was wanting to be in that field probably because he wanted to meet these people that were messed up.
That's possible. Yeah. He figured they're probably easier to control, you know, less apt to run away if he's like, because he treated them like they said, like he in first.
At first.
Take them out, you know, feed them, you know, and a lot of these people were poor, so they didn't have anything, you know. So it's sad, you know, that he's doing this shit. And then he had a third child with a mentally disabled woman again in 78. And he was arrested for kidnapping a young woman who was mentally disabled. So, like you said, Chris, he's just...
Yeah, like,
what's his fucking thing, man? And upon a medical exam, the woman was found to have been sodomized and contacted gonorrhea for redneck. So, yeah.
That's no good. Brutal. That's no good.
Yeah, I remember, and, you know, again, I laugh at word sodomized, because Tim, and I really need to tell a good Tim story one of these times, because there's a bunch of good ones, but quick. I remember having some conversation with him, and the word sodomy came up, you know, oddly enough.
Yeah, and, imagine that.
And he was like, what is, you know, like, he thought...
Wait, he didn't know?
He didn't realize, like, what exactly it was. He knew it was something like that, but he wasn't sure. I'm like, really? And then he had this thing he thought was, like, the most, like offensive thing you could do, like, when you kill somebody, was to sodomize them and then put their panties in their mouth. That was like, to him, that was like the ultimate, like, diss.
Oh my God.
And it was like, really? And I remember before we had agreed to do Low 12, he wanted to call the band Filthy Whore. Yeah. And I thought that was pretty funny. Another good one.
You're right, yeah.
Right.
But what we did was, because when we were trying to get shows, you know, nobody would give us the fucking time of day when you're starting out. So I was calling up clubs as the manager, and I was calling myself Filthy Whore.
Filthy Whore.
Yeah, and we had the first couple low times, we had pictures of Filthy Whore, and it was like blurry on purpose.
Right, right.
We're like, he's so fucking busy, busting his ass, can't even get a picture of Phil, you know. But like, if we would get there, we're supposed to play first, you know, we'd be like, well, Phil said we were, who the fuck is Phil? You know, our manager, Filthy Whore. And they're like, what? Yeah. So
that's too much.
Yeah, Filthy Whore. That's good shit. So, yeah, fucking, he was a filthy whore. He was just fucking everybody, sodomizing fucking people, give her fucking gonorrhea. I mean, he's just fucking ridiculous. But his sentence was shortened only to 3 years in a mental hospital, released in 83. Also arrested for spousal rape in 86. And 86 and 87 was when he got down to fucking business.
This is when the shit starts.
Yeah, because he starts ramping it up, the psychotic behavior. He became obsessed with having children and creating...
Like making a family. A baby factory, like Joey said. Like, yeah. This is almost a cult shit. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's what he called it, was a baby factory. Yep. That's what he wanted, you know? He was obsessed with young black women, and as we mentioned, you know, some of them mentally disabled. It's fucked up, man.
That, like, even like one of the dudes that he had help, like, not helping him, but one of the guys he hung out with was even mentally disabled and shit. Like,
yeah, he gets dragged into it at the end, you know. But it started with abducting Josefina Riviera.
His favorite.
Yeah, she was definitely his favorite because she helped him out. Of course, to survive, I'm sure, but, you know, you got to wonder how many opportunities did she have, but she did come through in the end. By 87, Heidnik had abducted 4 more women, and keeping him in the basement at, in case you want to send him a card, he's dead, but if you want to, 3520 North Marshall Street in North Philadelphia.
Didn't they tear that house down?
I believe they did.
Yeah. I'd imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably. It looked pretty raggedy in the fucking to back end of that.
Yeah, it looked pretty goddamn rough in the first place. Yeah.
So, raped and beaten daily by Heidnik while others watched. I mean, he was really fucking harsh, man. He was... And they would, like, fight over who was going to get raped, because when they were raped, he might, like, let them come up and, like, watch a movie.
And not punish them. Yeah, like, if you did something, like, if I do this, I'm not going to get punished as bad as I would if I didn't, if I tried to fight with them or whatever. Like, and I guess they just don't want, all right, I guess rape means punishment enough. I don't need beat. Like,
I mean, it's a weird fucked up way to have to exist, you know. But yeah, I mean, he did some, you know, really, really sick shit. You know, he had her helping him. He had the other 4. And then, as we talked about earlier, he dug that hole and he was putting some of them in there and covering it up with fucking plywood.
Like, the hole was barely big enough.
For one.
Yeah. Josephine, like, I guess she said she had asthma and shit.
Yeah.
So she's, like, in this hole covered up and couldn't hardly freaking breathe, like, freaking out
or
whatever.
For, like a day or two. I mean, I can't even imagine some shit like that. Yeah. That is just fucked up, you know? So he was barely
it wasn't that big of a hole.
No. And then to put multiple fucking people in there?
Right. I
mean, Jesus Christ. Pretty fucked up shit. So, you know, he puts the plywood down. He puts sandbags on it, as we talked about. Then he started doing the shit with the wires with the fucking water in there. And one of them got electrocuted. Killed her, you know?
Yeah.
So now he's like, well, what the fuck do we do with the body, you know? And he's smart. So he knows, you know, like, that's obviously a way I'm going to get caught.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is the stench in that house. People were always complaining about it.
Yeah, everybody was complaining.
And he would play the music and, like, the snow on the TV just crank it. So it was, like, really
loud.
Yeah.
And then one of the cops came over because of the smell. Didn't he see, like, burn a pork roast?
Burn
a pork roast.
How the fuck do you think, like,
that
smells like a pork roast?
How the fuck? Like,
boiling head on the stove.
You know what a goddamn burnt meat smells like, the smell of decay.
Like, whenever the cops went to Gacy's and they said they smelled the decay, and he tried to explain it away as, you know, his little Las Opso piss.
Exactly.
That's not dog piss, motherfucker.
That ain't
That's 33 fucking bodies in the fucking crawl space. Yeah, for sure. So, yeah. So, he knows he's, you know, got to get rid of it. So, he chops her up. He cooks the ribs in the oven, boiled the head in the pot, which is what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
And cops showed up. Oh, no big deal. You know, okay. You know, have a nice night, Gare.
Burn a roast.
Yeah, Gare, have a nice night, you know.
Fuck.
He froze the meat he didn't use. He marked it as dog food. Fucked up. Sources say he ground up the frozen meat, mixed it with dog food.
And that's what he fed to the chicks.
And he fed to the other girls in the basement. Yeah. So that's just fucked.
Forced cannibalism with
that's
dog food. I don't know which is worse.
Fucked up. Yeah. I mean, that's just awful.
I know that they were saying that it's a possibility that part wasn't true.
Yes.
Because he was trying to use it for his insanity defense.
Right, that is correct.
But I don't know.
Because his attorney said that he was apparently present when the police analyzed the utensils and all that shit from the kitchen, and there was no evidence,
right?
He says of that he did anything like that.
No,
so
shit.
It's still,
who knows?
It's still a possibility.
It is a possibility.
I like to think it happened just because it makes the story fucking more brutal.
It is feeding a chick to other chicks and dog food.
Yeah, that's fucked.
That's about as demeaning as you're gonna fucking get. But he was, you know, a very fucked up individual. He claims also that he actually ate it too.
Yeah.
But again, who knows? You know, he was trying to play that card.
A lot of these killers,
so it's hard to say.
Once they're given their stories or whatever, you know, who knows how much they embellish on what they say, but it could be true.
Yeah, because a lot of people said that about Iceman, you know, a lot of those stories were really overdramatized, but who knows?
Who the fuck knows?
It makes it for a good tale, you know, that's for sure.
I know one of the most brutal things I read about Gary Hynix was his. The youngest victim, I think the last one, she was 18 when he got her. Afterwards, after she was, you know, rescued or whatever, she told how he would duct tape their mouths and stab them in the ears with screwdrivers.
Yeah, because they were, they could hear him fucking coming home and shit.
Man, just reading that, I was like,
isn't
stomach
that awful?
Yeah,
I mean, that is just fucked.
Yeah, they shove screwdriver in their ear because they'd hear him coming home or leaving or whatever, and he could they were screaming for help.
Right.
I never knew when he was home after he did that. And
they
like suffered some real shit.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you can't imagine there being any good of that.
And he couldn't really cut their tongue out because he wants to face fuck them a few times.
Oh, Jesus.
Damn it. Nice.
Damn. Gormonger.
Gormonger.
Sounds like a song, Joe.
Yeah.
I would cut your tongue out, but I want to face fuck you. See, I'm
we're writing a whole album.
You're going to have to fucking give me some credits here, bro.
Fucking right, bro.
So now the second victim the first one got sick and died. The second one, I think, was electrocuted.
Yeah.
And they decided to not chop that one up, so they took that one down to New Jersey. in the Pine Barrens, yep. which is where my grandparents used to live. And it's
no
just,
shit.
Yeah. And it's just in Toms River. It was a community a lot of retirees went to. And anyway, they moved down there, and I remember, like, what the fuck? You're just driving, and it's just nothing but, like, these, like, four-foot little scrubbly-looking pine trees.
No
shit.
So
it wasn't even nice
so
pine
wasn't,
trees.
Yeah, okay.
And it was real sandy soil.
Right.
And it was just like that for fucking ever. It says, I checked it out, spanning seven counties along the coast of Jersey. And a favorite spot, as you can imagine, for like the mob and other people that want to make somebody
Iceman.
Go away. Yeah, because Iceman, we said that he took his first one down to the Pine Barrens,
I think.
So yeah, it would be a perfect place because who the fuck's going to find him down
there's
there?
There's probably tons of a corpses lot. Out there.
Yeah, and then the animals will eat, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
so it doesn't take long, you know. So definitely very fucked up. But like I said, my grandparents, we used to drive down there to visit and stuff and always remarked at how fucked up that was.
Yeah, it still blows shit. My mind. Like I don't know. I guess you're in that moment. You have this body. You got to dispose of it. But the balls it takes to drive one, even as far as he did for that. But then again, you don't want it near your house because that's, you know,
right. Then
you're even more in them.
It's like a classic catch-22. It's like, what do you do with this? And like, I mean, what if you get pulled over for a headlight?
Yeah,
can I open in your trunk? You know,
like, no,
not everybody's lucky like Dahmer. You know,
yeah. See, if you like that premise, you need to read my short story "Elvis and the Two Dead Hookers." That's in the first book.
Yes,
because that's exactly what happens to somebody. I'll leave it there. You got to read the story. So anyway, in 1987, there was a TV report called Gary Heidnik's House of Horrors. 30 years later, one of his victims, the youngest of the group, which was the one you mentioned, Joey, she told about the duct tape and the screwdrivers in the ears, talked about him being chained up to the pipes, and then some of them were in the pit, and they were just really, really bad. And the whole way he played all the music and the TVs up blasting so people wouldn't hear him screaming.
I don't lie, dude. I don't know about you, but my neighbors, dude, if my shit's on full blast for 24 hours, the cops are getting called fucking constantly.
I know. It had
bro.
To be a really bad area for them to
like,
just not
for
give
real.
A fuck. It had to be like a bad, bad part of town. It looks rough in the pictures, so I don't know. But, you know, I don't know.
He was originally from Cleveland, right?
Yes.
And so it's kind of ironic, not really, I guess, but that Castro, who had those girls in his house, was also from there.
Yes.
I wonder if he, like, you know, idolized Heinrich at all. And
it's very possible. Yeah. That's a good point, because, yeah, he was doing the same shit.
Basically the same shit.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Ariel Castro was his name.
Oh, that is right. That is. Yeah, I remember Castro. I didn't remember the first name. But apparently, Heidnik lets Josefina leave, as we mentioned earlier. He lets her go to see her mom and dad.
Yeah.
And he's just convinced, you know, he's got this God complex that he's, you know, she's not going anywhere. Well, the first fucking thing she does is go to her boyfriend's house and they call the cops.
Yo,
and she tells him, you know, what's up.
Did they believe her?
They wound up believing her because then they went to the. She told him where his caddy was parked.
Yeah, and he was sitting there.
And
shit.
They pulled up to the car and they're like, "Get out!" And then it didn't take long. I mean, they had him, and then of course went to the house.
Went to the house and they found these other girls in the fucking goddamn basement.
Yeah, I mean they're going in there. I remember on that documentary talking to those guys at the scene, like. You know, he had the head in the pot, and he had, like, meat in the freezer, and...
Like, okay.
Pretty fucked up shit, you know, and they're carrying... Of course, the girls had to be, I'm sure, all taken to the hospital for all kinds
of
shit.
Oh, I'm sure they're probably emaciated, fucking all kinds of shit, I'm sure, dude.
Yeah, just really bad news, so...
I'm sure.
Thank God she did, you know, get away when she did.
Right,
she probably all would have been dead.
Dude, she could have been straight up Stockholm syndrome and just like went and seen her parents like it was no big deal and left and went back with them. Like, luckily she wasn't though.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was pretty awesome that she, you know, had the balls to do what she did.
Right.
That's got to be difficult.
She was the one that was in there the longest too. So.
Right. Right. And you had mentioned, Chris, that he had that friend Tony Brown.
Yeah.
Who was also arrested, but he was released on bond, and I didn't see anything of what happened to him. Right. I don't think they did anything. If they did, it was a short bit.
Once again, he was mentally disabled.
That's true. Well,
yeah, once again, he was mentally disabled. So maybe they were just like, man, he got
kind
of
sucked.
I wouldn't be surprised if he gave them plenty of, you know, evidence.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's very probable.
I'm sure his testimony was a big part of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. But I Googled him and I couldn't find anything. I know his real name is Cyril, but I tried that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just didn't find anything other than what I already knew. He was, he tried to hang himself, Heidnik did, in his cell soon after his arrest in April of 87.
Right.
So, again, with him, with the the suicide attempts.
That was in, what was that, like 14? Fucking 14?
Yeah. Heidnik's arraignment, at his arraignment, he claimed the women were in the house. That just cracks me the fuck
said
up.
They were there when I bought the house. Yeah. Like,
I don't know what happened. I just bought this house. There was these slaves in the basement.
So I kept them. Yeah, I was like, what the fuck, dude?
I figured that was just part of the deal, you know?
Yeah, even if they were in
the fucking
house.
Weed whacker in the fucking shed. I mean, how?
Why not a meat whacker?
Exactly.
I mean, that'd be the best realty service in the world. They got people buying houses from them all the time. If you got free slaves.
With slaves in them,
Now, there's a commercial for you.
There you go. Yeah, that would be a good one.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, so pretty fucked up shit. But, yeah, that whole financial advisor thing came back to bite him because he said he was a very astute investor.
Yeah.
But he was convicted on two counts of first-degree murder and sentenced to death in 88.
Got executed in 99, correct?
Yes, July of 99. Yeah. He was a lethal injection. His family tried to fight it and said that he wasn't mentally competent to be executed, as they define it in the state, but they were like,
this dude's smart as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely knew what he was doing was wrong, and I know that's the legal definition of it. So
exactly,
it's kind of hard to say if he drove a fucking body like 4 hours fucking south to the pine
to get
barrens.
Rid of it. He knew that there was something going on.
He didn't just set it on the curb and said, fuck it, you know.
If he froze some arms and legs and marked them as dog food, he knew better.
Yes.
Yes.
True. True. Yeah, I mean, he could have put like Betty or whatever on the fucking.
I mean, like, that's my lady right there in the freezer.
Exactly.
I like my women like I like my coffee, ground up and in the freezer.
Damn. he attempted suicide again in 89 with an overdose of Thorazine. So there's number 15.
Yeah.
There's a song in this too, Joe.
Yeah.
It's gotta be.
Yeah. In July of 99, though, like you said, he was executed. He was cremated. And at the time of the podcast, he is the last person that's been executed in the state of Pennsylvania. So, so that's the deal with him. Research, found some good. We've been talking about him. A couple good documentaries on YouTube you can watch.
Yeah, definitely that. I know you read the book.
Yeah, Cellar of Horrors by Ken Englade.
Have you read that, Joey?
I have not read that one.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much on him in the way of books or anything. It's
He's
relatively obscure. I was actually surprised to see you had one because, I've never ran across one, documentaries and such. But, yeah, I saw that sitting on your table. I was like, huh.
Well, you can't take it from here, Joey, but you can look at it.
Right.
Be careful. Don't fuck up. but yeah, I mean, one thing I wanted to mention, we mentioned this before about the Buffalo Bill tie.
Yes.
Okay. I really admire the writer, Thomas Harris. He's fantastic. He wrote the Hannibal series. And if you've seen Silence of the Lambs and there's Red Dragon.
Red Dragon.
Hannibal.
Manhunter, the original. Like the original
one.
Yeah, Manhunter was
badass.
Freaking awesome.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so they're, his books are fantastic and the movies have been good too. But, you know, a lot of people, of course, know about Buffalo Bill. And we all know that, you know, Buffalo Bill kept the women
in the
cellar
basement.
Like that. But the thing is, you know, we know that Buffalo Bill was all into the skin. And so he took Gein, in my opinion, I don't know this for a fact, I just know it from reading the books, that in my opinion, he took Gein and Heidnik
and mixed them together.
Morphed them into Buffalo Bill.
Right.
But I also feel his Hannibal Lecter character, to me, is probably the best written, created character in that genre.
Right.
It's unfucking believably good. And then the fact that they cast Anthony Hopkins to play him is ridiculous, because the dude is unfucking real. But that being said, I think that where he got the idea for Hannibal Lecter was from Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy, yeah, with the Green River.
Yeah, because the FBI hired Bundy to help them profile the Green River Killer.
And he was pretty fucking accurate about it, fucking too.
He was.
But he was talking about himself, too.
Right. Because they were both from the same area. Yeah.
He was, like, reliving his... Yes. His murders and helping them with that one.
Yeah, I have the book. I have not read it, but I've heard that. I mean, I think last podcast or one of the podcasts I've listened to talked about him with that, and that it was a rope-a-dope. Nothing really came of it. But however, I think Thomas Harris hit a fucking gem of an idea by taking that and then creating the Hannibal Lecter character, which, anybody who's seen the movie or read the book knows, in Silence of the Lambs, they use him to try to catch
Buffalo Bill. Yeah. So
I think, you know,
it's kind of the same thing. It's kind of like he took three different real life murders and put them all together in one fucking movie. One story.
Yes. And I know when I was getting ready to write my first book, Six, I read a ton and watched a ton of these serial killer documentaries, even more than I would typically.
Right.
Because I wanted to create the most sadistic, fucked up of all. And I took some of the ones that I really thought were really fucked up and merged them into a really, really badass killer in that one. So I think that's probably a common thing with people that do that. So I just thought a tip of the cap to Thomas Harris, because that's the best series in that genre I've ever read in my life. They're just amazing. So the next podcast, though, we're going to continue the carnage.
The freaking Boston torso, or
the Cleveland, the Cleveland torso murders. Boston. What are you talking about?
I don't know what
the
fuck, dude.
You got Joey
number one.
That's why.
That's why I did it.
The Cleveland torso murders.
Yeah, Cleveland torso.
Very brutal, unsolved. So we're going to do another one, because we did Zodiac. Some people, like us, think it was solved, but that's another day. But Cleveland torso murders next time. It's going to be brutal.
It's going to be pretty gory.
Yes. Yeah, because when torsos are washing up on shore, you know, that
puts
a damper.
I mean, that's all you have is
on the family
torso.
Outing, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Just the torso.
Shit.
So that's going to be a good time. So we'll continue and dig into that. So until then, let's forge the fuck on with metal.
Some metal on.
Fucking IP to Lemmy, man.
Lemmy doing the nuge.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool. I stumbled on that one. I'm like, oh, that'd be cool to play.
Right.
Metal segment, little Motorhead doing Ted Nugent. Speaking of metal, man, we talked about this at the beginning of the episode. Schizo. I mean, these dudes are, you know, the thing about them is they're actually a really good band. You know, sometimes you get lost.
Yeah, thrash as fuck, dude.
Yeah, you get lost in the puking and all that part of it. And for anybody that doesn't know, like we said earlier, Google it, YouTube, and just type in schizo puking or anything like that, and you're going to see...
S-K-I-Z-O.
Yeah, S-K-I-T-Z-O.
T-Z-O, yeah. I knew I was fucking something up, man.
You were close.
God damn it.
But yeah, it's fucking wild. But yeah, he drinks stuff like these colored, like, milkshakes, kind of.
That's kind of what they look like.
They're
motherfucking
frothy
milkshake.
Looking. And he drinks them, and then he pukes on stage. And that's, like, part of their act. I mean, they have women come up on stage, like, willingly to be puked on.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean,
willing.
And they're not that bad looking either. I mean, they get fucked, you know? Like,
like, all I got to do is
do
puke
find
on a hoe?
Some chicks, like... Do you go to the mall and, like, go up to some girl and be like, hey...
can I puke on you tonight, baby?
Puke on you on stage, yeah. I mean, it'd be one thing for him to be like, okay, like, you could puke on me, but, like, on a stage in front of other people?
And happy about it.
Yeah, all smiles, yeah.
Yeah, happy about it.
So, and then he's got this thing called the chunk...
The chunk blower?
Chunk blower, thank you. It's a leaf blower with a fucking a funnel at the top, and he pukes into that, and it just sprays
it everywhere.
And when they did their 30th anniversary show, the bass player, Nasty Nate, he said that they got a puke shower on stage.
Nice.
So yeah, like Carrie. Yeah, pretty fucking nasty. So
It's so fucking crazy. He does other shit with his puke, too.
He does, and that's something that's funny. We saw that if you go on YouTube, you'll see this. There's a thing with Lance, the singer.
He's on Ripley's Believe It or Not and shit, dude.
Like, he does his barf art where he pukes on the canvas, and he uses a straw and like blows it around,
moves it around, makes different whatever puke designs,
and he does different colors and shit too.
Yeah, he mixes these drinks, pukes them back up.
Yeah, and he sells these things for thousands of dollars,
so
which
fucked,
is
dude.
Unreal. So anyway, when we were talking to Lance here in this interview, I'm going to play just a clip of it because unfortunately we had a really bad connection. But when I talked to Lance and Nate, Lance was saying that, he had the pictures, and he, because I said, don't they stink? I mean, they're just nasty, you know? After it's done, it's got to be stinking and shit. Who wants that?
Yeah, nobody wants that shit.
So I'm like,
why's your house smell like fucking puke, dude? It's my artwork,
yeah,
bro.
My bar fart, man. Don't be hating, you know? But anyway.
Be smelling like fucking goddamn Gacy's house and shit.
So anyway, I was like, do you like clear coat this shit? You know, like, how do you get it to not be like that? And in just very Californian kind of way, he said that he lets him bake out in the sun.
So then he does
some sort of wash over it. I don't know what. I didn't ask. It's a proprietary thing with Lance. So anyway, his barf art, it's fucking epic. But anyway, he said he was going to make us one for Murder Metal.
Yeah, he's going to make us one for the studio.
So we're going to hang it up in the studio.
Hell yeah.
So you'll get to see Lance's barf art here at our studio, and my people that live here are going to think I'm very strange. At least I'm not hanging it up in the dining room.
Right.
That's all
I'm saying.
I'll at least fucking give you that.
Okay? For sure.
So anyway, so check out this short, like 5-6 minute piece with Lance Ozanix from Schizo. And it is very odd and cruel at the same time how some bands just seem to explode and then others, maybe just as worthy, just didn't get the same break. So what do you guys, I mean, you've been doing it for a long time, and unfortunately, you know, you're not one of those household names, even though you guys probably should be.
Yeah, I don't know. We weren't really gunning for the household name. If it happens, great, but
right.
We just do what we do and just have fun with it. And, you know, there's a lot of people that know of us, or, you know, if they don't know of us, then you say, oh, you know, it's that band that pukes. Then they go, oh, okay, yeah.
Right.
So, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I haven't really thought about it that much after the last 37 years. We're just going through it.
We just
love it.
That's cool, man. I think that's great because I know I feel the same way. Like, I'm almost glad I didn't quote-unquote make it because I think, like, there would have been a lot of things I wouldn't have done. You know, I wouldn't have had a family probably, or if I did, it would have been a very different situation, you know, never being around and stuff. So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
we have our peers who we know who have made it.
Right.
And it's they've said it's a curse.
Yeah.
A couple of them said to me that, you know, Lance, whatever you're doing, just keep on doing it because you're the one who, as a group, is doing what you want to do and not some guy in a suit hanging money over your head to telling you what's good and what's has to do. So, you know, selling your soul, I guess.
I think that's a great way to look at it because I wholeheartedly agree. I think, you know, a lot of these guys hardly make any money, so you know they're probably always in financial straits and relationships.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all that shit's terrible.
Yeah, and if you don't start producing hits, the credit goes away in a matter of a snap of a finger.
Right, right.
And they don't, and then these days they don't give cases of money anymore. They don't do greenbacks anymore. It's all like credit, you know, like the record company owns your car, your house, this and that. Wow. And if you don't start producing, they take it all away.
Yeah.
And that's a tremendous pressure to have. And I said, fuck that.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think it's better to have fun, have sole control over what you're doing so you don't have somebody saying, you know what, I don't like that chorus repeated there. Why don't you, you know, no, I don't want you to fucking tell me anything. I just need to do it myself, you know. So I think you guys definitely have it right. I've been doing it the same way myself in various forms, and I think it's far better to be in that situation than the others. So
yeah, that's true.
That's cool. Well, is anything coming? I mean, what's the next thing for you guys? You've done so many things, but what's coming up next?
Our 20th record.
Oh, wow.
We'll start recording that at the end of this month.
Oh, that's killer.
It's bizarre saying right? that out of my mouth. 20th record.
Yeah, that is crazy. But that's fucking awesome, man. 20th. Wow, you got a name for it yet?
We've got it written down, a couple of things. We just haven't figured it out yet.
Gotcha. Well, that's awesome.
So early in the stages, so.
Sure. Now, do you guys record yourselves, too, like in your studio?
No. I don't like doing that. I want to have the, you know, I like supporting studios, and plus, you know, when it's finished, it's finished. If it was in my home studio, I would keep going, and I would never get it done because you're never satisfied. Oh, you know what I mean?
That's a good way of looking at it. Yeah, we've done it. Yeah. We did it both ways in Low 12, but I know what you mean. I did two of them here at my house, and it was, yeah, you're just tweaking constantly.
I don't want to tweak anymore. No way.
Right. Exactly. Anything else? Website, any way people can get a hold of you guys out there in the Bay Area? I know you're on Facebook. I'm sure you do all the social media stuff.
Just schizo.biz. We're never going to do Twitter. Fuck Twitter. I don't know. That's about it. And then, you know,
Schizo Thrash Metal.
Schizo Thrash. Yeah, Schizo Thrash on Facebook.
Right. Cool.
And then if they want to get a hold of me, so at sonic.net.
So there we have it. A little interview I did with Schizo. Did you dig that?
Yeah,
guys?
That shit was pretty badass, man.
Yeah, those guys are awesome. I wish more of it would have turned out, but we're going to play more probably next week. I'll pick another piece, but unfortunately, right. The whole 30 minutes or so.
Yeah, it sucks when you don't get a good connection.
Yeah,
man.
Skype can be a motherfucker.
I'm pretty influenced to start doing art of my own now using my semen.
Oh, there you go.
If anyone wants a cum piece by Gormonger, hit me up. I would love my cum to hang in your house.
Nice. And you could maybe get hooked up with, what is that, sick fuck with
yeah.
the shit?
Yeah,
the
yeah
shit
yeah.
and cum like a split.
Maybe, you know? I haven't you done a split with fucking
right?
Sick
we
fuck?
Should do a cover yeah. of just all schizo
shit
songs.
And fucking semen. Yeah,
that fuck yeah.
Hell yeah, yeah, dude.
Sheeman.
Sheeman.
I'm fucking writing a girl
oh,
fucking.
No.
I'm writing a porn grind album sitting here. Just fucking free fucking.
That's fucking awesome, dude.
Yeah. So anyway, we had a great time. We mentioned it at the Bloodshed in the Country, too.
Yeah, that shit was so fucking bomb,
it
dude.
It was fantastic. Great crowd. Good. The weather held up. It was hot, but, you know, it could have been a lot worse.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
Thankfully, we had cover at our booth, because we had a booth there, Murder Metal Mayhem, and it was great. We had a lot of people come over and say hi.
Say hi, what up? We got
taking
band
pics.
Interviews.
Yeah, we got interviews with most of the bands that played, and it was a lot of them.
Yeah,
but we had a really good time. The
Joey here, he played.
Yeah, Gormonger fucking tore it the fuck up. I mean, there was so many great bands. I really dug Crotch Ripper. I really liked Necro Cannibal Ass Grinder.
Yeah.
And what was funny was he was talking to me before the show. He actually came up to me. I had no idea who he was. And he said, right. Man, I really admire, you know, I saw Low 12 back in Pain back yep. in the day. I was like, wow, dude, that's a fucking ages ago. I'm like, right? Man, I feel fucking ancient. But that's all right, you know. And he's like, yeah. And I was standing in front of his table, but he was out front, you know,
right,
where
right.
the people were. So I was like, do you have anything to do with this? And he's like, yeah, I'm fucking Necrocannibal S. I'm like, well, fuck, you know, like, do you have yeah. shirts, you know? So I hooked CK up.
Yeah, CK Necrocannibal S. Hell yeah.
And I got him a CD from Crotch Ripper, which awesome. Is the one that he, Alex gave me. So those awesome. Guys are absolutely fantastic. I've been listening to that on Google Play, but CK's got this insane fucking collection of albums and CDs. And,
right.
And he's going to talk about it in the next piece here.
Hell yeah.
About he cleaned the room out.
Oh did he finally clean that motherfucker? Oh,
it
shit.
Out.
Way to go, CK.
Is somebody's phone making
yeah,
that
I think
thing
it's mine. Like, I'll turn that shit
Jesus,
down.
Jesus, with you with the fucking phone.
Fucking idiot.
Wow. So, anyway, no, it's just funny because I don't think that's mine. But
right, right.
I thought, man, maybe my hearing.
And I ain't got no friends, so nobody's hitting me.
Oh, damn. Yeah, not after you're talking about hanging your semen. In
the oh, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, go to fucking Forest and get jacked off, man. I don't know what to tell you. So anyway, we did have a really good time at Bloodshed, but the fucking moment, though.
The
was,
moment.
Oh, my God.
Menstrual Munchies, baby. Jesse yeah. up on stage doing
yeah,
that
they
thing.
They came out on stage dressed like chicks. Because I'm like, is there girls in this band? Because from where I was sitting, I couldn't tell. You know?
Right, right. Jesse just got this
now,
pink dress on.
Let me reiterate also that this was a milder performance for them. Because most of the time, there's
Jesse's
cock hanging.
Fucking naked.
Yeah, and most of the time,
Jesse
you're seeing
naked.
His ass, if nothing else. So. This wow. was tame because he saw there were kids there.
That's nice of him.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So he dialed it back
yes.
and butt chugged the fucking beer.
He fucking
beer
bent
on
over
stage.
On stage, shoved a beer bottle in his ass.
Yeah,
and what didn't go down,
he drank it from his mouth.
Drank
yeah.
from his
he
mouth.
Went ass to mouth.
Jesse,
with
you
bottle.
The homie, bro.
Jesse, what the fuck, dude? You're the best. We talked to him after the show. Him and
yeah,
the
yeah.
dude. Oh, it was fucking awesome.
And
so,
that'll be on our full Bloodshed episode.
The last week of September is when we're going to do the Bloodshed episode. It's going to be great because we did all these interviews. I recorded at least one or two, maybe some bands. I did three songs from each one.
So we're going
to
try and
to
play
try
some
to pick
live
some
tracks.
Stuff. Yeah, nice, play some nice. Stuff. And I got just about everybody. I think I did get everybody recorded.
Hell yeah.
So. So yeah,
I know we got pretty much all the bands. There might have been one or two bands we missed, but
yeah.
we pretty much got all the bands on.
We
just
did.
A little recording, couple
yeah,
minutes
couple
here and there,
minutes.
Nothing major, a couple simple
but
questions.
But we did ask
Bloodshed
Jesse,
was fucking awesome.
We did though ask Jesse about the butt chugging.
Yeah,
so he does specifically
yeah.
talk about.
Yeah,
it.
When he explains the butt yeah. chug, you're gonna be like, "Are you fucking serious?"
Yeah, you guys are gonna love this one. So yeah, and if you're not sure what butt chugging a beer is, Google that.
It and is exactly what it sounds like.
Yes, it is exactly what it sounds like. Drinking a beer through your anus. So,
Jesus.
It was a good time. We had a great great day. And so we're definitely looking forward. He's already got a date, August 31st next year.
Yeah.
Is Bloodshed 3.
Bloodshed
so
3, dude.
I told him Count Murder
so awesome.
Metal Mayhem in for sure.
Yes,
so.
We will definitely be out there again.
Yeah. And maybe... Chris, you'll be there with your new project, Heidnik's Piss Sheet.
Heidnik's yeah. Piss Sheet. That's it. That's
or,
what's going to happen.
Heidnik's failed suicide attempts or something
yeah,
like
Jesus
that.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, get that shit together, dude. But anyway, yeah, I mean, you would have saved some fucking misery if he would have fucking
just
killed
just,
his
yeah,
damn
if he
self.
Would just, yeah.
Fucking piece of shit.
He should have been at Ripley's for the most unsuccessful suicide artist
yeah.
of all time.
Yeah, really. That's funny. There has to be a world record for that.
For real.
And Heidnik may have it. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, we had a great time. So we're going to play the CK piece that we had to pre-record because he was unable to make the live.
Yeah, not able to do it tonight.
And next week he's on vacation with his wife. But the week after that, I don't remember which one we're doing that week. However... He's going to do live. He'll be available. So we do like having him coming in live because it's a lot more fun.
It's a lot more fun.
With me and him chilling, it's a little more of a serious.
Like, and unfortunately, I won't be able to be here Sunday because me and Cashman here and my brother, we're going to be on our way back from Full Terror Assault down south. Yeah, so by the time you guys get this podcast able to listen to, it'll be that day. So I know we've been plugging this for a while.
Yeah,
I hope motherfuckers got their tickets. Yeah, it's 3 days in the wood. It's
September
6th, 7th, and 8th.
Yeah.
Southern Illinois, right by
Cave and Rock, Illinois. It's a big place. They've had, you know, for the Juggalo fans, gathering the Juggalos, but a lot of big music fests have been there.
Yeah, and this is
an experience unlike any other because it's 3 days of you're basically living at the metal show and you're just surrounded by metal people. You're selling each other stuff and it's like your own community. Pretty amazing.
It's pretty badass.
That's really cool. And like I told you guys last time, if it wasn't for the camping part of it,
I'd
take you up on that. But we'll see. We'll see. Maybe next time I'll deal with it or get a room somewhere.
There you go.
And
come in. If I can just grab an actual camper and you ain't got a tent camp.
Oh, sure.
If I can pull that shit up in there.
Yeah,
that's true. So, yeah, so that's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to hearing about that when you guys get back.
Oh, yeah,
so
we get back, it'll be fucking fun.
I think we're going to try to bring a hand cam, right, and get a little bit of interviews.
Yeah. Talked about the recorder
and shit, yeah.
If you're going to be able to take good care of my handheld
recorder. Oh, man, I don't know.
I'll grab it when Chris is too drinky. I got you.
Because you know Cashman don't drink like that, so.
That recorder's the shit.
Right.
But anyway, so yeah, we'll play the CK segment this week on Bruce Dickinson.
Blow, get it, CK.
All right, we got CK all the way from Danbury, Connecticut, calling in on Skype to discuss our metal segment of the week. CK, how the fuck are you, my friend?
I am fucking great. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. We're talking about metal, so that always puts me in a good mood. And the one we're talking about, man, is about as iconic as you can get. So I'm kind of anxious to hear what you got to say about him.
Mr. Bruce Dickinson. And I'm sure everybody knows who he is. Obviously, the lead singer of Iron Maiden. But he's much more than that. The guy, in my opinion, is a renaissance man. I mean, this guy does everything. I mean, he's a professional fencer. He's a broadcaster. He's a professional commercial airline pilot.
Yeah, that's fucking unbelievable with the Iron Maiden fucking plane, and he flies it on tour.
Yeah, he flies it. But
what the fuck, you know? Like, most singers would be, like, lounging in the back, like, getting a blowjob and doing coke. And this dude's fucking up there flying this shit, you know?
He's flying the fucking plane, you know? And he was also an actual commercial airline pilot. He actually worked for a company. He owns an aviation company that deals with maintenance on planes. He brews his own brewing company. And he is a cancer survivor. So, you know, holy shit. How much more can you get on this guy's resume?
Yeah, I mean, that's about as good a pedigree as you're going to get there, you know?
You know, and if anybody's not aware, Bruce is the lead singer of Iron Maiden. Before that, he was in a band called Samson, which was part of the new wave of British heavy metal in the early 70s. He was on two albums, I believe, and he went by the name of Bruce.
Really? Oh, that's kind of lame.
Yeah, he kind of hated it. But he said, you know, that's what they chose. And, you know, being 20 years old, 21 years old, you know, who's he to say he's part of a band? And, you know, it is what it is.
Right.
We'll
forgive him.
You know, how can you not forgive Bruce?
Exactly.
But, you know, he caught the attention of Iron Maiden or Steve Harris when they're about ready to let go of Paul Di'Anno. Samson toured with Maiden, and I guess he must have made an impression on Steve Harris because obviously, you know, he joined the band.
That's cool. I always wondered how that happened. So interesting.
You know, so that's how that worked out. you know, and Bruce was pretty much in the band from 83 to 83 to was it 93? No. 83 to 2. Yeah, 93. Or 2003. Give me one second.
Uh-oh, you're not drinking whiskey over there, are you?
No.
All right, just making sure, because, you know, Shawback was here, you know, with the show dates and getting them all crossed up. I'm just fucking with you.
It was 82 to 93, his original.
Yeah, Shawback's over there with you. I could tell that's what's happening.
But, you know, he put out a solo album in 1990. It was supposed to be a one-song deal for Nightmare on Elm Street 5. He wrote a song called Bring a Daughter to the Slaughter with future Iron Maiden guitarist Yannick Gers. It turned out to be they wrote a full album, so he released a solo album in 1990 called Tattooed Millionaire. And the thing I liked about Bruce was when he released a solo album, it was different than Iron Maiden.
Right.
You know, a lot of these people, like Rob Halford, for instance, you know, he left Judas Priest because he wanted to do supposedly something different. And he forms a band called Flight, which is the same thing that Judas Priest was doing.
Very much
why
so.
The fuck,
why?
Yeah, why leave, you know?
To do the same thing, yeah.
Right. You know, and meanwhile, at least Priest got another singer who could fucking sing, unlike Iron Maiden, who fucking douchebag.
Your boy.
Blaze Bailey, who couldn't fucking sing a note. But, you know, to get back to Bruce, he put out that album in 1990. He actually toured up behind that album, and I actually saw him live at, if anybody's not familiar, there's a place in New Haven called Toad's Place, and it's very iconic.
Oh, wow.
It's not a big place, but the big thing is the Stones actually played there in 1989 as a warm-up gig for their Steel Wheels tour.
Oh, wow.
So he stayed with Maiden for 3 more years. After Fear of the Dark, he left Maiden just because he wanted to do something different. He left on good terms. 1994, he put out an album called Balls to Picasso, which was a metal album, hard rock slash metal. Got good reviews. After that, he wanted to form a band called Skunk Works. Recorded the album, brought it to the label. Label said, you know what? We're not going to release it unless it's a Bruce Dickinson album. So even though the band is called Skunk Works, it was released under Bruce Dickinson. The album was called Skunk Works. Skunk Works. It was an alternative metal album.
I've never heard of that. I'd have to check it out.
Yeah, it's a really good album. It's just a little bit of a different vibe than what Bruce has done before.
Right.
Little of an alternative mix into it. That band broke up. The reviews weren't that good. So there was rumors going around that his next album was going to include Adrian Smith.
Oh.
You know, who left Maiden previously before right after Seventh Son. He recorded an album called Accident of Birth with Adrian. And not only that, the album cover has Derek Riggs' artwork on it. So it's kind of like, you know, brings back to full circle to kind of like a Maiden type thing.
Yeah.
Again, doesn't sound anything like Maiden would have ever done. At this point, you can hear that he's starting to get a little bit of a heavier vibe with his music, back to his metal roots. You know, got good reviews, awesome album. And the next album called The Chemical Wedding, before he put it out, all he kept on hearing was that this album was so fucking heavy. It was like the heaviest thing he's ever done. That album came out, holy shit. he was not kidding. It was probably like the heaviest thing I've ever heard Bruce done that he's ever done. In interviews, he said it was so heavy in the studio that the guitars were so heavy and tuned down. It was being recorded. Obviously, at that point, it was still analog recording.
Right.
The tape machines were shutting off.
Damn.
Because it was so fucking heavy.
Interesting. I never heard of that before, but that's cool.
But you know, if nobody's ever heard his solo stuff, you got to pick it up. It's not, you know, like I said, it's not. If you're expecting Iron Maiden, you're not going to hear Iron Maiden. It's something different, but it's all good stuff. You know, in 2005, he released his last solo album, Tyranny of Souls, which is a good hard rock metal album. Again, the guy puts out, everything he puts out is just quality work. And about 6 months ago, Sanctuary Records did release all these in a box set on vinyl.
Oh, cool.
So it is available on vinyl. They've also, a couple years before that, released all these on 2 CD deluxe versions, which are great. So they are available for sale. So if you could pick them up, I would go ahead and pick them up. You know, like I said, if you're expecting to hear Iron Maiden, you're not going to hear Iron Maiden rehashed. It's Bruce Dickinson on his own vibe. Right. That's what you're going to hear.
Yeah, and that's like after this segment, these guys are going to hear a segment of a song Bruce did on that Sabbath tribute album, which I thought was really cool. I didn't know he did it, singing Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, which is one of my favorite Sabbath songs, so it was just really cool to hear it. So that'll be a little tag out at the end of this part here so people could check that out. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he also covered Sin City by AC/DC too, which is a great cover too.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, he played that. When I saw him, he played that live. It was fucking phenomenal.
Oh, I love that song. That's one of my favorite Bon Scott AC/DC tunes, man. It's just the shit.
It's the shit.
Nice.
And, you know, if you want to get into stuff before Maiden, you know, you got his stuff, a couple albums with Samson. They're hard rock albums. It's nothing like Maiden. No, it's metal, but it's not epic. They're okay. They're not phenomenal albums, but if you want it, you know, he's got the two albums, Head On and Shock Tactics, which are still available, I believe. But you know, anything that Bruce does, you know, he's the fucking bomb.
Yeah, I ran into a guy with a Maiden tattoo at the Bloodshed in the Country show the other night, and we were talking. He's considerably younger than us, and we were talking. He was saying how he had seen him on this and on that. And I said, "Yeah, the first metal show I ever saw was Maiden on Peace of Mind," and he was just like looked at me, and I'm like, "Yeah, dude, that would have been like '83, you know?" And
yeah,
he was just like. Like spellbound, like I wasn't even born yet, you know.
Yeah,
but
I love when people when they.
But he's like, "Oh my god! Like you saw that?" I'm like, "Yes, I saw that," you know. And he's just like just stopped like talking about these tours he had seen that were fairly recent. You know, when you hear somebody, you know, do that, so it is cool. I mean, yeah, it makes you feel old, but at the same time, you know, I'm really glad, you know, to have grown up in that era that we did, because this stuff was so exciting. I mean, I remember seeing the video for, I think it was the Number of the Beast on MTV. And I was just like, "What the hell is this? You know, this is crazy," you know? And
yeah, you didn't see shit like that back then.
No,
no. You know, and people were like, "Oh, they're satanic." They're not fucking.
No,
it's
not
about
at all.
A friggin' dream.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But that was definitely, as you know, the time of that whole, we've mentioned it on the podcast before, that satanic panic, and the metal stuff was just all front and center with that. And, you know, Dee Snider, you know, different people defended, but really it was probably the best thing that could have happened to it, because that's what probably pushed me further into metal was the fact that it was very taboo. It was,
right,
you know, that evil thing. And, you know, when you wore your Maiden shirt to school, like some of the kids like kind of looked at you like, damn.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. I remember wearing my Number of the Beast shirt and getting looks. And, oh, you know, yeah. You know, and that I know, as far as for me, and I'm sure for you, that pushed you even more into the underground stuff, you know.
Oh,
the Merciful
definitely.
Fate, the Venom, the Slayer.
Right, because after a period of time, it's like, yeah, Maiden is amazing, but then all this other stuff, like the real dark stuff, started coming out. The bands you mentioned, you know, Merciful Fate, Slayer, Venom. So then started getting into that sort of thing. And then Maiden, while still amazing, just didn't seem nearly as dark and evil, because really this stuff was dark and evil. It just seems like every so often, you know, like there's some bands that come out that bring it even, you know, more to that.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure there's quite a bit of stuff that you or I don't even like or listen to that's probably quite a bit more dark than the bands we mentioned, you know, and that's fine.
Exactly.
Everybody's got their thing.
But the great thing is you could go back to like any of these albums and they're still relevant today.
Right. Right. Very much so. Yeah. I mean, you can, and I listened to Peace of Mind here a couple of weeks ago and was just completely blown away at how amazing it was. And I remember being at the show and I remember the band that warmed up for him, which I think was Fastway, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, my God. Fast Eddie Clark from Motorhead.
Totally.
His band.
But I remember sitting there and the person I went with, you know, he was like, man, you know, it's going to probably take them a while to set all that stuff up, you know. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to get up and go anywhere because I'm afraid it's going to start. And it was like 5 minutes later, the lights went out. And I was just like, oh, my God. And then they started with Where Eagles Dare. And I was just like completely at that moment was like my baptism into metal. I mean, that was like, wow, this is the shit I've been listening to, and I'm seeing it live, and it's so good. And it's just, I was completely hooked and floored after that. And forever, you know, listening to metal, ever since. It's just ingrained in me from that moment, man. I remember it distinctly. It was unbelievable.
I completely, you know, understand that. That's the way it was for me, but it was probably more with probably for me more with Sabbath. You know, obviously I've told you that I've had a brother 14 years older than me.
Right.
That,
right.
You know, he was the biggest influence to me with music. Cause he, you know, what 4 or 5 year old was listening to Black Sabbath.
Right.
You know, and that's all the shit I learned when I learned to play drums. I started at four years old, and that's how I learned, is listening to Sabbath and all, and you know, Sabbath, Thin Lizzy, you know, Alice Cooper, early Judas Priest. That's how I learned. And you know,
right.
I was lucky enough to have a brother 14 years older than me that, you know, gave me that gift of music. And, you know, obviously it springboarded into something more serious and more, more aggressive music and more, you know, stuff that I know today he would probably be like, what the fuck are you listening to?
Right.
You know, but that's, you know, it just grew from there. And Maiden was another band that, you know, I listened to, and it springboarded into other things. And
right. But it comes back around because, you know, like you said, you put this stuff on 30 years later. It sounds amazing. It still sounds like quality wise sounds great.
Yep.
All recorded back in the analog days, and it just thumps, man. It sounds great, and it's like an old friend when you listen to it. So I'm glad we did this segment on Bruce. It was your idea, CK, to do it. It was a good one because, man, it's hard to beat a guy like that that's done so many different things, even outside of music, and just doesn't seem like he's bad at anything. He's just
exactly.
An amazing person.
He is a modern day Renaissance man. That's the only way I could explain him.
Yeah, it's a good way to define it, man. So, all right, well, we're going to tag out. Go ahead.
No, if you can, just pick up some of his stuff or go on Google, whatever you use to stream. Stream some of his albums. You'll be pleasantly surprised how great these albums are. His solo stuff.
Fuck yeah. Well, we'll tag out with a little Sabbath Bloody Sabbath with Bruce singing it so they can get a flavor. But again, CK, always good to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you. And again, I enjoy doing this segment immensely. I hope people, you know, dig it and find some new stuff to listen to.
Exactly. All right, man.
Dickinson.
Yeah, Bruce doing some Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. I love that fucking song. It's one of my favorite Black Sabbath albums, actually, and that song especially is just cool. Fucking heavy riffing with a fucking tambourine in the background is just really fucking weird.
That song, right, I mean, all of Sabbath to me, but that song in general is so ahead of its time.
Totally, yeah. They were doing shit that people never fucking thought
right,
of.
Right,
it's great.
For sure.
Definitely would be a good CK segment doing Sabbath.
Oh, fuck.
Could do a whole show on Sabbath, really.
All right.
So, definitely my biggest influence back when I started playing. Geezer Butler, huge influence on me as a bass player. But no, I wanted to mention before we get too into the Mayhem stuff, a lot of people have been contacting me about my book, The Dreadful Lives of Enoch Strange, coming out October 5th as physical copies, and then October 12th.
I've seen the proof, and it looks fucking awesome, dude.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm really happy with the way it turned out. Brian Usual did a great job. I'm going to try to get an interview with him here pretty soon so we could talk about the book when it comes out or near when it comes out. Brian would be a good one. He's also a death metal bass player. He used to play death metal mariachis up in Chicago.
Nice,
yeah, he's fucking
dude.
Badass. And he's a Steelers fan. So.
Oh,
so I got that alliance. And like Steve Tooley, he's fucking gigantic. And I've never actually met him. Well, we did meet. Brian and I met. I don't remember it, but he does. Low 12 did a show up there, and he said he met me. I don't remember it.
Right, right.
But we haven't really had a serious like face to face, and he's done like two or three Low 12 covers.
Done lots
he's
of
done
shit
all
for all
my
you.
Book cover art. I mean, he's just awesome to work with, and so it's just funny to really we have never like sat down and like I broke bread or anything like
right,
that.
Right.
So we need to. But anyway, we'll get Brian on here. But one thing I saw on Facebook, dude, we were laughing about this earlier in our pre-show meeting. That
yes.
sounds like professional.
Yes, yes.
About the dude on Facebook. And I, you know, everybody, you know, we're guilty of scrolling around, you know.
That's Chris, man.
And I'm scrolling and I see this and it says, "You ever feel like jerking off while at work?" And I was like, "What?" And then he has those hashtags.
Yeah, yeah. He says, hashtag getting paid while my hand's getting laid.
Yeah, that was true.
I make cum on the clock.
Bill
Nye, the Nazi spy. Check out Chris Durst shit,
dude. Oh, is that who that
is?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that was great, man. Because it was just so funny when we did the Couch Fucker series, you know,
right,
the
right.
early episodes, and we talked about him like constantly jerking
just
off. And he was jerking off in the hospital with a fork in his eye. And we were like, "What?" You know, well, this guy comes out with the jerking off at work, and I was just dying.
Oh,
so,
fuck yeah, Derek.
That's really good. Where's he from?
Keokuk, Iowa.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Right on the border of Illinois and Iowa.
And I was almost going to ask him in a comment, like, "Can you tell me where you work so I know to stay the fuck away?" Like, tell me it ain't McDonald's or something, please. I don't want to fucking wonder what's on my Egg McMuffin one
I got some
morning.
Bill Nye jizz in my burger.
No,
what
don't worry.
Fuck?
He works at an eyewash factory.
Oh,
no, that's not true. That's not true.
Nice. I wash.
I wash.
I wash.
So, yeah, that was really good. Now, last week, We also debuted, or no, it was the second one.
Yeah, Cashman was here for the first one. Yeah.
Cashman outside. We did the first one with you, the killer cage match.
Now, oh, yeah.
We've been asking listeners to post on the Facebook page two numbers between 1 and 30. And we got two. Thank you to Sue Rovins again.
Thank you,
the
Sue.
The author from Normal. She's awesome. And then Melissa
Araujo. That's my cousin.
Araujo.
Yeah, oh, Araujo. That's my cousin.
That's your cousin. Okay, yeah. That's cool. She's been awesome.
Yeah, I saw she fucking was looking for shirts and shit, dude. Yeah, I'm like, fuck yeah. Melissa, been, thank you, dude.
She's been sharing it and everything. That's fucking cool as hell. So these ladies picked the numbers, so just random. Of course, I got the list here at our command center. And so the numbers picked gave us Jack the Ripper.
And the Zodiac.
Versus Zodiac. So kind of cool, you know, two killers that we technically don't know who did it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're,
that is kind of cool that it worked out that way.
It did. Yeah, I thought the
same
thing.
That's fucking cool as shit.
So Jack the Ripper versus Zodiac. And the two objects, an endless bottle of bleach. So you could do some fucked up shit with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a glass Coca-Cola bottle. So that could get ugly.
I feel like, I don't know.
So what do we think here, guys? I mean, to me, it's kind of obvious with this one. The last week, I thought, was more with BTK and Dahmer.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
The boiling water and the butcher knife. Or
I'm on the side of if Jack got the fucking bottle and busted that shit,
I think
you're done.
Yeah, I think fucking Zodiac's ass is
done.
Yeah, because he was shooting people for the most part.
Yeah. So. But if he had that in his bottle of bleach, and while Jack's coming at him, though, and he just, like, throws it in his fucking eyes, Jack's fucking toast,
dude. The thing with the Zodiac killings, though, is he never really got too up close and personal until he had them gunpoint and tied up. So to go hand-to-hand with a weapon, you have to... I gotta give it to Jack.
Yeah, yeah, I think old saucy Jack, man, he gets a hold of that bottle, and
he's
fucking
like,
history,
you're fucked,
man.
Dude. I don't give a shit.
Because he carved up those fucking bitches.
Yes,
man.
He
Jesus
did.
Christ.
Yes, he did.
Whitechapel represent.
Whitechapel. Yeah, sure. Mean streets of fucking East London.
Yeah, some gnarly shit there.
But yeah, so I think this one's kind of tilted big time to Jack.
Toward Jack. Leave us some comments. Let us know what you guys
what do
think.
You guys
put your
think?
Thoughts
so
into
all three
it.
Of us agree that Jack.
Yeah, I'm on Jack's side on this one.
Joey, you think so?
Yeah, too? Yeah, I'm all going with Jack.
All right, so we're going to say Jack won this battle. We'll keep doing it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's kind of like Clue, you know, Jack with the bottle. And...
You know, it's funny you say that because when I first did this, I thought of a location.
Yeah.
Like so-and-so with the candlestick in the library.
So you kind of, yeah,
I
nice,
did think
nice.
Of that, but then that's I thought, awesome. No, let's simplify it
right,
with just the objects
in a cage,
enclosed
space,
like a cage.
You're in the octagon.
Yeah, there you go. So it's kind of like when I did the Brutality Report, if anybody remembers when I did Psycho Dance, which was a mix of serial killers and river dance, and I put their heads on the dancer's body. So it was like Gacy with like a girl's body, like doing some shit.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, I did Psycho Dance. I did a whole series of those.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. So that reminds me of that silly shit I did back in the day. Again, way ahead of my time, apparently.
Right.
So anyway, we've got any good mayhem we want to share?
Oh, no, I figure we got Cashman here. You got anything you want to speak about?
I do.
About?
I mean, I'm full of stories, and I've got one if y'all want one.
Yeah. I'm down, brother.
Go ahead, dude. All right. An hour and 37 minutes.
The last show I did with you guys, we hit two. Yeah.
We were close, so we'll see. So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I got another mayhem story for you. If those of you that didn't hear the skiing story from a few episodes ago.
Yeah, listen to that.
Blame
that
it on the Metalheads, the one about the West Memphis 3.
Yes, that was a great episode.
Great episode.
So, anyway, I've got another story for you guys, and... my last story, I was 16 years old in that one. This one, I was 18, so, you know, I'm getting a little
more
legal.
I'm of age, at least. Yeah.
Sure. So I'm hanging out downstate in a very debaucherous part of Illinois, and we're partying. I mean, 18 years old, what are you guys doing at night? You guys are all just hanging out and partying, and I'm at a friend's house, and we're drinking, doing whatever we're doing, and I get a text from some girls, and they're like, hey, do you want to go with us on a country cruise?
Oh, shit.
And, of course...
You gotta love them country cruises, bro.
Yeah, and, of course, being around here, that's what we grew up doing, and we spent most of our time out there. So, I'm like, yeah, come pick me up. I'm at this party, And it's these three girls. They pull up, and they're in this van. I've never seen the van before. Whatever. I'm not paying attention. Me and my buddy, we'll call him Dudley because that's his name. Dudley. He was from Detroit. He was something else, but he was the dude that always got me in trouble. So really, I needed to stay away a little bit.
Right.
If you happen to hear this, Dudley, shout out to you. You were a big part of my growing up.
He wasn't the Detroit Velvet Smooth dude on fucking Trailer Park
Boys. No, nothing like that. So anyway, me and Dudley jump in this van. We're driving. We're like, it's like a conversion van, work van. And we're in the back part, and there's two girls up front, one in the back with us. And as we're driving, I look up at the dashboard. And this is at night. This is probably, pushing 2 o'clock in the morning. I look up at the dash, and I'm like, you have your brights on. We're still in town. We're going out of town.
Right, right.
And I'm like, you got your brights on. She's like, oh, because if I turn them off, then I've got a pediddle, one headlight.
Yeah, one.
And
oh,
I'm just like,
dude.
Oh, my God. So already I'm feeling like something.
Yeah.
This town already hates me and all my friends.
Police, right, like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Future, yeah. So yeah. What the hell happens as we're driving? What do I see pop up? Red sure. And blue lights.
Yep, yep.
Absolutely. We get pulled over. Okay, so I'm sitting in the back. I'm drunk, but I'm trying to sober up because I know I got to deal with these cops. My buddy Dudley, he obviously
trying to
even,
sober
yeah,
up.
He's just wasted. He don't even give a shit. And then these girls. So the cop pulls up, and then he gets all of our IDs and stuff. All three of these girls are underage for curfew.
Oh, shit. Are you for real?
Yeah, me and Dudley are overage. So the cop's asking them, oh, well, whose vehicle is this? The driver points at me and says, oh, his parents.
Get the fuck out of here.
I was like, oh, hell no. The cop takes our stuff, goes back to his car. I look at her and I was like, you're fucking dead. I was like, I cannot believe that you just fucking said that. First off, my parents didn't even live in this town at that time.
Right?
Yeah. They lived up here. So my license, everything is from up here. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ.
Dude.
So, okay, so I cannot make this up. The cop comes back. He takes us all out of the van. So he's like, okay, the three girls are underage. They're going to go to the police station, and then their parents
are going to come fucking get them. Yeah. Right.
And then they pull me and Dudley out, and they pull us out of the side of the van, and they're like, oh, are you guys drinking?
Right,
and I'm
right.
like, no, I'm fine. He gives me field sobriety tests and all that, and I passed it. I passed all of it, and I was surprised because I'd been partying all night.
Hell,
my buddy
right.
Dudley, he's like, yeah, I'm fucking wasted. And then they're like, well, can we do a breathalyzer? He's like, fuck no. I'm like, well, dude, you're already telling him you're drunk.
Right.
So anyway, the cop proceeds. He takes me to the back of the van. He's talking to me. He hands me back my ID. He's like, oh, so this is your parents' van? I'm watching him check the license plate and everything.
Right, right.
And I'm like, yeah, this is my parents' van. And he's like, okay, will you take this? You get it back to the house.
Get the
and I don't
fuck
want to see
out
you out
here.
Again tonight.
Oh, damn.
I was like, what the fuck? So I got away with this stolen vehicle.
Oh.
And so I'm like, I don't know whose van this is.
What
right?
the fuck,
you know what I'm saying?
Bro.
So it turned out this girl had known that they had one of those key locks that they kept under the fender of their car.
Right,
so she
the
would
lock
go
box
out and
of the
it
magnet
and
shit. Yeah,
so they would take
yeah.
it out and joyride it. Anyway, I don't know where this place is. So you know what I did? I took that fucking van and parked it right back in front of her house, and her parents fucking saw that shit in the morning.
Nice.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's what that bitch gets for fucking telling them it was my fault.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, dude, for that's real.
I walked down to the fucking laundromat, called my buddies at the party I was at, told them what happened, said, come pick me up, and we partied the rest of the night.
Dude, that's fucking brutal, bro.
Yeah, that's...
Holy shit. Toontown?
Mattoon. That was Mattoon, yeah.
Oh, boy. Mattoon. Good old Matt too.
God damn, bro. Yeah. I know you never told me that shit before.
Yeah.
That's fucked.
Yeah, that
man.
Was a scary. I mean, like I
oh,
said,
I would have been fucking scared
yeah.
as fuck.
Yeah, that's fucked up when somebody does some shit like
it's
that.
It's his parents. Like,
yeah.
Bitch, what?
Right? Yeah. So that was a good one. Well, thanks, Joe,
God
for
damn,
sharing
Joe.
That with us.
Yeah, for sure.
Hell yeah.
Any other mayhem before we go into
No. Other than the fact the fucking Jesse's sticking a bottle up his ass. I mean, I know we covered it, but damn.
It bears repeating.
Yeah.
Worth it. Jesse butt chugging. Man, I was in the mood for some fucking Bolt Thrower.
Bolt
man.
Thrower.
Kill Chain from Those Once Loyal. That song, Joey and I were talking on break here. They have a song on every album that's exactly the same. And they change the, it's a thing. Yeah, and they change the words. So, like, live, they'll do, like, a medley of it. But it's that
same song. Nice, that's fucking awesome. And it's like,
okay, the riff is really cool, but you've played it for 11 minutes.
Right.
But Bolt Thrower is fucking awesome. Dig those guys big time. I used to play them a lot on the Chopping Block, and they're a kind of an obscure band. You know, they don't play, they hardly played the U.S. Now they're pretty much done, so that sucks. But they did play Chicago a few years ago, and I did not get tickets in time. They went really quick because they don't play here, so I was pissed I missed that.
I really
dig those guys.
Yeah, they were much more about their studio releases than the live, I think.
Yeah, well, they played a lot over because they're UK, so they played a lot in Europe, but here they just never really had a promoter that was willing to do what they needed to do, and they did have a tour here, but it went real bad, so they just kind of soured on it.
Probably couldn't find them the 2-pound bags of Reese's Pieces.
There you go. Jerry was just going fucking nuts. I bought as many fucking bags as that. What the fuck is the difference? Yeah. That fucking guy, man. I wonder what ever happened.
That's fucking hilarious.
So, the bumper music this week, Morbid Angel, Bolt Thrower, Bruce Dickinson, and Motorhead. Definitely fucking awesome. Also killer that we had Joey Cashman in here. Yeah, Gormonger.
Dude. Once again, thanks for being in here.
Yeah,
dude.
Surprise guest for the show.
Always a pleasure. Always fuck a pleasure.
Yeah. Hell yeah. And also a big shout out to our very, very good friend, Big Mike Collier, who lost his mom last week.
Yeah, so like, yeah, our thoughts are out there with you and your family, homie. Like,
big time, Big Mike. We're very, very sorry to hear that, and I hope you're doing okay. We're here if you want to give us a call, brother. Chris, you had some shit you wanted to mention, local stuff that we didn't catch in the metal segment.
Yeah, once again, it's this month, the 29th of this month at Bada Brews. Is the Central Disorder CD release party with Oblivion, Zero, Black Market Democracy, Chalk, Vicious Attack, among other bands. I just want to announce that. Anybody who wants to get out there and get there, check it out at Bada Brews in Chicago on the the 29th.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 29th. And then, once again, October 5th and 6th is the Porn Fields up in, it's in Belvedere.
Outside Rockford.
Yeah, outside Rockford. I will get a thing with the actual address, and I'll put it on the Facebook page. I don't have the actual address at the moment. I just know how to get there.
Right. Yeah, but that's supposed to be a great show.
But yeah, it's, like I said, Crouch Ripper, Towering Abomination, Menstrual Moonshine, which, dude, that fucking name is so awesome. Oh, man. Sinworm, Gorgy, among others. So that's going to be a good show. So check that out.
Let me just say, too, that he also just added to Porn Fields.
Oh.
Sexual Atrocities.
Oh, yes, he did add Sexual Atrocities.
And Rottenness from Mexico, because they're going to be up here doing a tour. Nice. So it's going to be right in their path. So they're going to be
playing. They're going to be stopping.
I think they played the Central Illinois Metal Fest when we played there.
Yeah.
You know, when Rottenness played that, CIM?
That was when Bird drank his piss.
He drank his piss. Yes, exactly. That was
nice how we remember that. Yep.
That's fucking so awesome.
I was there. I saw that whole thing go down. Yep. Yeah, that was
that's
sure.
awesome.
Disgusting. Yeah, that was fucking brutal, man. And, you know, we've been talking about also the October 27th. There's actually three shows. There's Trick or Troll
up in the Quad Cities for Crotch Rippers putting that on, Alex and Eric.
Right.
At Bada Brews in Moline.
Well, no, that's not in Bada Brews. That's
Beer Stube.
There is a Chicagoland show with you guys didn't comment on Vile Cynic.
Those guys fucking tore it up at Bloodshed.
Wicked, man. And those guys are playing on October 27th up in the Chicago area. Great lineup. And then there's a show in Athens, which is down there by Springfield, Illinois.
Yeah,
with Chalk. Yeah. And it's a Halloween show. And so, man, there's three shows.
In the same night. It's like, what do I do?
It sucks because I really want to go to the Trick or Troll. And I'm definitely leaning that way. But,
right? Hell yeah,
the
dude.
The one up in Chicago.
Fucking awesome.
I hate Chicago, but I really do love Vile Cynic and those other bands on that bill sounded cool.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I'm leaning toward going up to the Moline show for
and
sure.
Then one last one I have is September 12th coming up in like a week or so. Chalk's going to be playing with Fool's Brew and Godspeed at the Night Shop in Bloomington, Illinois.
Right.
It's kind of a weird lineup because they're going to start off early at like 5:30 or whatever. There's going to be like two like folk singers or whatever.
It's a diverse show.
And then they're going to go into harder rock, into metal or whatever. Yeah. So
that is really weird.
Yeah.
The Night Shop is doing some interesting thing because we're going to be there.
Yeah.
It's a Thursday night, October 25th. For what they're calling Tales of Terror, and they're going to have Sue Rovins is hosting that, and she's going to do some storytelling.
Some horror stuff.
Yeah,
some...
and she asked us to come in, and so we're kind of batting around how we're going to do it.
Yeah,
it's
like,
going to be live.
This will be
stage.
Like our first live event ever.
Yeah,
it's kind of odd.
It's
going
to be kind of cool. So
yeah.
We'll see what we come up
with. Have to be there to see what you guys do. There.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be
interesting.
So I'm curious.
Yeah, so
we'll can't wait for that.
We'll give you more details as they become known.
Let me say real fast, as a musician, to hear you guys, when you guys were just saying how on the 27th there's all those shows and you guys had to try to decide which one to go to, that is so cool to hear that, because that means that the scene is doing so well.
Yes, dude. Hell yeah.
Yeah, it is good to hear. It is. And it, when you have a decision to make with three really good shows, it's like,
right,
fuck.
Yeah. It's like, what the fuck do I do?
Better to have that than nothing.
Than nothing at all.
Right,
exactly.
Sure. And there were years when there was nothing.
Oh, yeah. Low 12, 18 years of that, we saw a lot of things come and go, that's for sure. So thanks to all the listeners, though, out there. We really appreciate you guys. Chris, we had a few comments here. You want to read the first one?
Yeah, I got you. Jake, he commented, I knew of the West Memphis 3 before, but the podcast really helped knowing more about it. Awesome episode for sure. And I'm glad we got to enlighten you a little more on that. Thanks for the comment, man. I mean, like always, we appreciate everybody's comments. And I'm glad we got to help you out to know a little bit more about the situation.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few people that really didn't know much about West Memphis 3. So that was cool. And we had Joey in here that night.
Yeah.
We were talking about that. That was a good one. I thought that was a good one, too. Let's see. Sapphire. I love that name.
Yeah, that's a beautiful name.
Boing. I just love you guys. I would love you to do a live podcast sometime. I would be there. Well, Sapphire,
we just said, please, we're going to have like 20 minutes or so at the Night Shop in Bloomington.
October 25th at the Night Shop in Bloomington, Illinois. Maybe we'll see Sapphire there.
Yeah, that'd be pretty
cool.
Hope so. And then Tony Parker emailed. He said, I love how the podcast just keeps getting better. Just when I think the show was the best it could be, the next one blows my mind. I really love what you guys are doing, and it's so much different than any other. And that's kind of what we strive for. We don't want to be like, I know there's all kinds of true crime podcasts out there, but we don't want to be like any other one. I'm glad you enjoy what me and Pete do.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really good ones out there, but we definitely try to be different. So that's cool that he said that.
Yeah,
that's
hell yeah.
Fucking awesome. And I don't know how it ended up. I read the girls, but just saying. Amanda Billings commented, the new killer cage matches are great. Love that idea. Well, thank you, Amanda.
Yeah, that was a great idea, dude.
It was a lot of fun.
I hope you enjoy this week's.
I know I was trying to explain it to Chris that first time, and it was kind of confusing, so I was able to get my
get the
elevator pitch or whatever they call that, the little 3-minute summary down better. So
and doing it through text too, so it wasn't like face to face.
Like, god damn it, let me just show you.
Right. I got this list and now there's 30.
Like, we're gonna do this, man.
so we'll keep doing those. It's a lot of fun. Go to the Facebook page, buy a new Murder Metal Mayhem t-shirt or koozie, help support the cause. We appreciate that.
And the shirts are amazing. We got rid of quite a few.
We did. We had
at,
a lot of people picking up merch.
Dude, I see them rocking them all over the place. Paw back.
Yeah, that was amazing. Your dad sporting a fucking shirt.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
That was the shit. And you can go to PeteAltieri.com or my author page on Facebook for all the latest with the book and stuff coming out, The Dreadful Lives of Enoch Strange. Again, thanks for listening.
We appreciate all you guys.
Yes, we
do. Everybody listening.
We do. And we're going to modify the slogan here a little bit just because Joey's here. Spread the word like a cold sore at a swingers convention.
Yes, thank you again for being here once again, Joey.
Hey, Cashman outside. See you guys next time.
Hell yeah.
Oh, wait a second. I can't let him leave.
Oh, shit. What did we forget?
I got something. I can't think of what it is. But I think they really need to hear this.
If they want to shake their butt,
they're going to. Because even the fucking white boys got a shout.
Oh, my God. Becky, look at her butt. It is so big. She looks like one of those rap guys' girlfriends. But, you know, who understands those rap guys? They only talk to her because she looks like a total prostitute, okay? I mean, her butt. It's just so big. I can't believe it's just so round. It's like out there. I mean, gross. Look. She's just so black.
I like big butts and cannot lie. You other girls can't deny. You want a girl walks in with an itty-bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you'll get sprung. Want to pull up top because you notice that butt was stuck. Deep in the jeans she's wearing. I'm hooked and I can't stop staring. Oh, baby, I want to get with you. Take your picture. My homeboy tried to warn me, but that butt you got,
he's so horny.
A rump of smooth skin. You say you want to get in my bed? Well, use me, use me, cause you ain't that average groupie. I've seen him dancing, toil with romance, and she sweat, wet, got it going like a turbo vet. I'm tired of magazines saying flat butts are the thing. Did the average black man and ask him that? She got a pack much back. So fellas, yeah, fellas, yeah. Shake that healthy butt, flip it up back.
Face for the Oakland boot camp.
To retrieve it. So Cosmo says you're fat.